Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by. The conference will begin momentarily. We thank you for your patience and ask to please remain on the line. Gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Estate and Charitable Gifts Planning Basics webinar. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. If you would like to ask a question during the presentation, please use the chat feature located in the lower left corner of your screen. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, April 29, 2014. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Ellen Brunner, Director of Catholic Community Foundation of Archdiocese of Indianapolis. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to welcome you to this webinar. I have the pleasure of introducing Phil Purcell. Phil will be starting our presentation today. He'll be sharing information about estate planning. Phil currently serves as Vice President for Planned Giving and Endowment Stewardship at Ball State University Foundation. He teaches courses on law and philanthropy, nonprofit organization, law and planned giving as an adjunct faculty for the Indiana University School of Law in Bloomington and Indiana University Center on Philanthropy and Fundraising School, and serves as a member of the Tax-Exempt Advisory Council for the IRS, the Great Lakes States. He is an attorney and member of the American Indiana State Bar Associations. It's my pleasure to welcome Phil to the call.
Thank you very much, Ellen. It's a delight to be on the webinar with all of you today, and we appreciate your joining us, and we hope we provide very helpful information for you. We will be stopping at 4 points during the course of the webinar, so as we go along, feel free with a pencil and paper to make note of any questions you might have. And as I said, we'll be stopping at 4 different points to entertain questions that you can type in, and we'd be happy to respond to. Well, let's begin with our first slide. And what we'd like to do is just review some basic questions around estate planning. And the first most important question, perhaps, is why should you have a plan? You know, it's interesting. The American Bar Association every year surveys the general population regarding, you know, how many people have an estate plan, how many people have updated their will or trust. And interestingly, it's always less than half of the respondents who say they've done it. So it's clear that a lot of people procrastinate. There are a lot of reasons we procrastinate. You know, there are tough decisions to make. We have to seek out good counsel. We have to consider our assets, our loved ones, and their needs. And then over time, things change. So the important thing is getting started. And That's why having in your mind the importance of why you should have a plan is a motivator to either get an estate plan in place or to update the plan that you currently have. As indicated on this slide, a important point to note is that if you don't have a plan, the state of Indiana has a plan for you, regardless of what you may wish. You may not agree, of course, with the state's plan. In general, the state uses a formula pursuant to the intestacy laws to dispose of your estate. In general, your estate will go to your spouse, children, or immediate family. Unfortunately, the state's plan does not take into account family with spatial needs, the disposition of specific property to certain loved ones. If you want heirlooms, for example, to go to specific children or other loved ones, then the state will not take account of those wishes. As well as the state plan of intestacy laws does not provide for any charitable gifts to organizations that you may wish to support, such as your church. So lots of good reasons to have a plan. In addition to the state having a plan for you that you may not like, there are other good reasons to consider estate planning. First of all, you'd have the peace of mind knowing that you have cared for those who you love after you're gone the best way you can. So you would have the joy of knowing that you have a plan in place and that your values are expressed after you pass away. In this way, you're also establishing security for yourself and your loved ones. And these estate plans can provide for titling of assets, the setting up of trusts, and other arrangements to care for those you love after you're gone. Professional advisors work with clients that plan for many different types of situations, such as special need loved ones, either children or adults, a large family with complex needs, or an estate with unique or variety of assets. Well, it's, of course, a very serious subject that we're talking about, but we'd like to share a couple cartoons to perhaps add a little levity to the situation. So here's a young family getting ready to go on vacation, and the father has a long checklist of the things that need to be done as everybody's trying to pitch in to get ready for the big trip. So, of course, we do a lot of planning in our lives. We have a lot of checklists, our grocery lists, and all sorts of lists, to-do lists to get things done. So it's interesting that for many people, estate planning and all the various things that need to be done to estate plan are not on our to-do list, and that's what we're encouraging you to consider today. So now that I hopefully have everyone motivated to either create a plan or update your current plan, now let's shift gears a little bit and talk about how we create a plan. And this is very important. A starting point, of course, is to identify your priorities. Priorities can involve things such as personal needs of yourself, of course, first of all, and then personal needs of loved ones like your spouse, your children, or other ones you care for. Other priorities include perhaps reducing taxes, spending as little on taxes either at the state or federal level as possible. And a final set of priorities may involve charitable interests, providing for charitable gifts to your church, your parish, programs, serving those you care for in your community, those types of priorities. After you create your list of priorities, you will share your goals and concerns with your professional advisors. And in addition to a list or an inventory of your personal priorities, you'll need to develop a list of your assets to share with your professional advisors. A lawyer who's going to assist you with estate planning will actually want to have both of these inventories, your personal priorities and goals, as well as your assets. And when we talk about assets, what we're speaking of are everything that you own, a retirement plan, a life insurance contract, stocks, bonds, mutual funds that you may have in a brokerage account or actual shares perhaps, real estate that you own, and regardless of where this property is, it could be real estate in Indiana or another state, any bank accounts you have, savings accounts, checking accounts, certificates of deposit, anything in a bank, In addition to those kinds of assets, you'd also want to include on your list any collections, jewelry, antiques, heirlooms, or other personal property. Literally, any type of asset that you own would need to be on your inventory. The Archdiocese offers a very helpful resource called the Personal Financial Affairs Booklet, available at the Archdiocese website. We've put the link to that website on this slide. And the hope is that you could use this book as a prompt to help you make your list of your personal priorities as well as your list of assets. Keep in mind that most assets, of course, can be transferred to loved ones or to charities both during your life or at death. As it turns out, some assets, when it comes to charitable giving, may be better for giving to charity than actually giving to family, depending upon your goals and objectives. And that's where a conversation with Ellen Brunner here at the Archdiocese can assist you in thinking about, if you're going to make a charitable gift, well, what kind of assets would be most attractive for charitable giving as opposed to giving them to my family? An additional considerations for how to create a plan includes involving your advisors. It's very important that you make arrangements to have a qualified attorney. First of all, only attorneys are qualified to prepare legal documents. Other kinds of individuals might offer you documents, but keep in mind that anybody other than an attorney who prepares those might be engaging in unauthorized practice of law. Other kinds of advisors can also be very helpful to your estate planning process. Your accountant, if you use an accountant to do your tax return, they can be very helpful in determining what kinds of assets might be good to give away, how much charitable deduction you can use by giving away assets. Your accountant can help you determine whether you may be subject to potential estate tax. And a host of other tax-related issues could be very helpful for an accountant to advise you. Thirdly, of course, your financial advisor, those who help you manage, say, stock or brokerage accounts or life insurance, can be very helpful in making sure you have everything on your inventory list for estate planning purposes. They can help you keep track of the current value of these assets, as well as your cost basis, what you paid for those assets originally. In addition to these professional advisors who can assist you, you may also want to have conversation with individuals at charitable organizations that you may wish to support, such as the Catholic Community Foundation. Ellen Brunner here at the Archdiocese is very knowledgeable and helpful, and all conversations are without obligation and kept in confidence. There are many ways you can find advisors by consulting with trusted friends, by talking to local bar associations and other ways to connect with advisors who can provide you the most helpful and qualified support. In addition, the Community Foundation has a professional advisor group that is a resource, and Ellen Brunner can provide recommendations of multiple names of lawyers, accountants, financial advisors in your geographic area. You will always have to make a choice, of course, of what advisor you would hire, but options can be made available to you. The next step in creating a plan is to, once you have a draft of ideas from your professional advisor, especially your lawyer, you share your plan with loved ones and others who will benefit. By sharing your plan, you're making them aware of intentions. Of course, sometimes you may want to keep things confidential. But for example, if you are going to name an individual to serve as executor of your will, or serve as trustee of a trust, or serve as guardian of a special needs loved one or a minor, then these folks need to know ahead of time what your intentions are and be prepared for those responsibilities. In addition, you should name both a first choice and a second choice for executor or trustee or guardian. So if the person who you first identify is unable or unwilling for any reason at that time, then there's a second choice that you have articulated. In addition, it's helpful to share with charitable organizations your intentions. And again, of course, that information we kept in confidence. For example, you want to make sure you always use the correct legal name of any charity you designate a gift for. If you attach any specific restrictions or designations to gifts, it's very important that the charity understand what your intentions are with regard to designations, and they may have ideas or suggestions about how to improve those designations if they foresee a problem with your planning. And again, of course, all of that conversation is kept in confidence. And now I'd like to pause, and then I told everyone at the beginning, we would take several moments during today's presentation to allow for questions, and we'd be interested in hearing from you now, what questions you might have for us. I know that one question that comes up quite a bit is whether the Archdiocese can provide sample estate planning documents to you. And as I indicated, Ellen Brunner can provide multiple names of lawyers or accountants who are qualified in areas, allowing you to select and make decisions. She can also provide sample bequest language for charitable bequests or sample charitable trust language so that you can share these kinds of documents with your lawyers. However, the Archdiocese itself cannot do your estate planning for you. You will have to engage your own independent counsel so that you are advised of the best choices. Another question that often comes up is, well, what if I move to another state? What happens then? And my suggestion, recommendation, of course, is that if you have permanently moved, say you retire from Indiana and move to Florida, and you establish residence in Florida, then it's a good idea to talk to a lawyer in that other state and establish a new plan so that assets that you may own in Florida or remain to own in Indiana, et cetera, would be efficiently handled at your passing. So you would need a review and potential revision of your estate plan documents by a qualified attorney in the new state where you would reside. Another question I know that a lot of people ask is, are there any spatial rules and provisions for spatial needs loved ones, either children or adults who are disabled for any reason? And the answer is yes. There's spatial kinds of trusts, for example, known as spatial needs trusts, that if properly drafted and implemented, would continue to qualify the individual for Medicaid coverage and other government benefits, but would also allow for available additional resources to them for their ongoing maintenance and care. So if you have special needs loved ones, then that's also another very good opportunity to talk to a qualified lawyer who can share with you good planning options for providing for their long-term care. Another question I know that, and I know I mentioned this briefly on an earlier slide, and again, the idea of if you want to look for a good lawyer or accountant, how do you do that? You can always, there's a resource for lawyers called Martindale Hubbell. Martindale Hubbell ranks, rates lawyers, and that's often a good resource to check on the quality of lawyers. And if you go to law firm websites and read their biographies, they'll often indicate their ratings. Obviously, in Indiana, there are lawyers who have spatial estate planning designations provided by the state of Indiana for their good work and taking a test and examination for being a qualified estate planning specialist. So in Indiana, there is a group of lawyers who are spatially qualified for estate planning. Of course, accountants have different skill sets. Some accountants specialize in personal tax planning, and that's the kind of accountant, of course, you'd want to talk to. And financial advisors, again, some are more suited for organizations as opposed to individuals. So referrals from close and trusted friends, from business colleagues, and if you have a good relationship with one type of advisor, like an accountant or an attorney, asking them for their recommendations for other types of advisors can be a good, helpful source as well. So we see no other questions being posed, so I'm now going to move to the next set of my presentations. And another cartoon for your pleasure. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All of Humpty's family and all of his friends couldn't believe Humpty didn't have a will or estate plan. And, you know, this is, while it seems a bit silly or trite, the reality is every year there are famous people, very wealthy people even, lawyers even, judges, who pass, and lo and behold, they did not have an estate plan. And it puzzles many people why that might be the case. But again, as I indicated at the beginning, a lot of people procrastinate for a whole set of reasons, and maybe you're one of those people. And we hope that this webinar is a motivating factor for you to consider moving forward. So when it comes to creating an estate plan, the important thing to do is to begin as soon as possible. Evaluate and revise as factors arise. And take into account life-changing scenarios, such as family needs and priorities, changes in the value of your assets, changes in your charitable interest, and any changes to the law. There are lots of factors that change over time. And even once you have an estate plan in place, it's essential to constantly revise that plan. It's a good idea maybe every year to call your lawyer, call your accountant, and say, hey, you know that estate plan we created, have there been any changes to the laws or so forth that would necessitate making a change? In addition, you know, children, you may have new grandchildren on the horizon that you want to account for. There could be divorce. You may have new or different assets that you need to retitle. So, again, a lot of reasons to consider a plan every year to make changes as appropriate. As you do your planning, there are a lot of documents that you need to take account of. A will is a legal document that names one or more persons to manage your estate, to provide for a transfer of property at death. Wills are subject to state law and must comply with applicable state law. A financial power of attorney are very durable documents. They're very useful. They can take effect immediately, so you can give someone power to handle financial affairs for you. And they could be broad-ranging, like all financial powers, or specific. For example, you're going on vacation out of the country and you give someone financial power of attorney to close a real estate sale on your behalf. So powers of attorney can be very broad or very specific. They can be effective immediately, or they can spring into effect at the happening of an event. Or if you're in a medical accident and can't make decisions for yourself, then the financial power of attorney can come to effect and you've already identified who could make decisions for you. A healthcare representative is someone who would, again, when you are unable to make decisions, this is someone you've identified to make decisions for you, like hiring and firing of doctors, rehabilitation needs, and the like. If you do a healthcare representative, you should put a copy in your medical record with your family doctor. Similarly, with a financial power of attorney, if you have one in effect now, you should share it with your bank, your brokerage firm, or wherever the power of attorney person who is acting on your behalf would need to have access, and so that the bank or broker would be aware of who they're dealing with. A living will is a legal document to provide for your wishes at times when you may be near death. And that expresses that you no longer are able to make decisions and you do not want life-prolonging procedures taken. The Archdiocese website has some helpful resources on this subject, and we've put the website link on the screen that you may want to take a look at with regard to creating living wills. And a revocable living trust is also a very helpful document that can provide for ongoing management care of assets when you're infirm, and a good lawyer can help you draft such a revocable trust. And again, the income tax liability of those assets would still flow through to you individually, but the trustee of the trust would be managing those assets. And you can be trustee until the point that you're no longer capable, and then you would name a successor trustee. HIPAA declaration is a directive that a named individual, such as a power of attorney, a personal representative, a trustee, or loved one, has access to medical record information. So hospitals would need to have this HIPAA declaration from you to share health-related information. And then finally, a funeral planning directive would be helpful to express your wishes around your ultimate disposition and funeral planning. So that's a quick review of the documents. Looks like we do have a question. The question is it possible for the Archdiocese to provide a roadmap for estate planning? I have a will, and I need to update it. I also have a lawyer and accountant. Just curious of examples of other estate plans used. Well, the a conversation with Ellen Brunner, a confidential, no-obligation conversation, could be helpful for you. She can provide ideas and suggestions, especially as regards a charitable giving in an estate plan. And as you share information with her, she may have other suggestions or ideas as well. Again, Ellen is not a lawyer and is not independent counsel for you, but is someone you can bounce ideas off. She cannot provide you, she can provide you good general estate planning information, but a detailed plan you're going to have to sit down and work on with your advisors to make sure you're using something that works for you. Another question that came through is, how good are wills printed from the Internet? Oh, that's a great question. The my answer to that is always the same. You know, lawyers buy malpractice insurance because they are accountable to you and your surviving family if they get something wrong. And unfortunately, documents you may buy off the Internet, their accountability is not as great. And the question I would have for documents in the back of my mind would be, are they up to date? Do they take into account current state law that, say, the Indiana legislature may have passed this year, revising the, for example, any changes to what makes for a valid will? Do these documents adequately take care of all the assets that need to be considered when planning my estate? You know, what questions might I have that I can't get an answer from the Internet? Or, you know, the main problem we have with Internet work is we're limited by our own knowledge. We don't know what we don't know. And so that's why you have and hire lawyers, is to assure the fact that there's someone accountable for doing it, that they're up to date, and they're asking us questions so that we're thinking of everything that we need to. And one more question, is it a good idea to use joint ownership? The joint ownership of assets is a good idea. You can name someone jointly on a bank account, a stock account, real estate, and other title to property. The key would be to keep in mind that if it's truly joint ownership with right of survivorship, that means they have access and complete legal authority to take that asset. So you only do joint ownership with someone you completely trust, and when you pass, they automatically inherit that asset, of course. But joint ownership may not take care of everything you need to do for an estate plan. You know, you still would need to consider a will that would cover assets that you don't own jointly with anybody else. Healthcare power of appointment would be necessary for healthcare decisions, a power of attorney for financial decisions when you need someone to make decisions for you, a HIPAA declaration. All those other documents would still be necessary, but joint ownership can be part of the estate planning equation. Okay, so now I'm going to turn the program over to Ellen Brunner, and she's going to share some thoughts around charitable gift planning.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's my pleasure to transition and talk a bit about values-based planning. And really what that means is really identifying who and what are important to you. And Phil talked a little bit about that when he talked about planning priorities. But it really is important that you sit down and identify and consider and reflect on what is important to you so that your assets are distributed in a way that expresses your values and priorities in life. And you can even look at this planning process as an opportunity to lighten the load during your lifetime. So not just through an estate plan, but you can create a life plan or add to your financial plan to think about how do I lighten my load over my lifetime in a comfortable way so that I can witness the good works of my philanthropy. You know, it's interesting. I was reading the 1992 U.S. Bishop's Pastoral Letter, The Stewardship, A Disciple's Response, and wanted to share this with you. Jesus' disciples and Christian stewards recognize God as the origin of life, giver of freedom, and source of all things. We are grateful for the gifts we have received and are eager to use them to show our love for God and for one another. And that's, you know, when I think about values-based planning, I think about that as a way to reflect on how do I use a will and charitable gift planning as an opportunity to share God's gifts in a manner consistent with my faith. And I ask you to do the same. So I wanted to go through a few opportunities, specific opportunities with you today. And there's a list here, and I will share with you, we will be, as follow-up, we will be sending the PowerPoint presentation as well as a link to the recorded webinar for you. So do know that you will have access to this information. But here's a list of assets that you can consider contributing, not only through your estate plan, but again, as I mentioned, kind of as you lighten the load over your lifetime, because there are unique opportunities that I'll address as I go through the list that pop up that you'll want to look for that if they suit your situation. I think the first item on the list most people are familiar with. If you have an interest in charitable giving, you'll often think of writing a check or charging something to a credit card and getting your points for that. but different ways that you'll look at using cash is an easy way to make a gift. So that is, I think, of the list, most often people think of that. There are two right under cash, retirement plan and life insurance and commercial annuities. Particularly life insurance and retirement plans. In the next slide, I'm going to spend a little bit more time on those because those are some very easy ways in which to make charitable gifts that I'll touch on in more detail. But I will share that during lifetime here recently, there was the IRA rollover charitable provision that allowed people ages 70 and a half and older to gift up to $100,000 from their retirement plans to charity. Now, unfortunately, that expired at the end of 2013, but we are hoping that will be reinstated this year. So if you are taking a required minimum distribution or you feel that you have, through your advisor, have learned that you have an opportunity to transition some of those assets, you might want to look at that opportunity, and it's called the IRA charitable rollover, and we are hopeful that that will be reenacted this year. And that's, we have seen a number of donors that have directed gifts to parishes, Catholic schools, and our charitable Catholic charities agencies for using this opportunity. You also can look at the retirement plan as a very useful asset to gift, after you're gone, in terms of using the beneficiary form and simply noting that there's a charitable organization or multiple ministries or charitable organizations that you'd like to benefit from that plan. It's really a highly taxed asset. With some of the changes in law, it's not as heavily taxed as it was in the past, but I think most experts would still agree that if you're charitably minded, retirement plan assets are one of the best assets for charitable giving purposes. And you simply have to request a beneficiary designation form and make those changes, again, with assistance from your advisor. But do look for any legislation that's reinstated and consider and look at that IRA charitable rollover opportunity for lifetime gifts. The next item on the list is life insurance and commercial annuities. Life insurance, too, I think somewhat common for people to have life insurance, and they purchased a policy years ago and have it paid up and it's tucked away. Some people I know who I've talked to, as they do their inventory of assets, they even forget about some things they have. And so something like a paid-up whole life insurance policy is a wonderful gift that one might consider, gifting to a charitable organization. And again, by working through one's agent and through the life insurance company, can very easily make that gift to charity. And also, new policies could be created as well, where an organization is named as a charitable beneficiary. Commercial annuities are a little trickier, but there are certainly ways that we can use commercial annuities if one has those listed as an asset, can use those as charitable gifts as well. The next item on the list, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, those three items. I would say, very fortunately, there's been a much greater interest in gifting stock. Now, that is dependent on the market, because really when the stock market appreciates, there's much more benefit to a donor making a charitable contribution because of the, the capital gain on that stock can be, the full value can be appreciated as a charitable tax deduction. But the capital gains tax isn't due for transferring that asset to a charity. So there's a lot of benefit versus writing a check if you have appreciated stock, to gifting that to charity. Bonds and mutual funds are similar. Bonds can be a little trickier depending on the type of bond that one would want to gift. But certainly that would be a great option as well as mutual fund shares can be utilized for charitable giving during life and at death. The next item listed there is real estate, which is a little trickier. I would want to share that the Archdiocese of Indianapolis and all of its ministries want to work with donors to have a conversation about what makes both best sense for individuals, what their interests and priorities are in terms of what ministries of the church do they want to support, and then what are those assets that they feel that are transferable or able to be gifted. And I think real estate is really also an opportunity that should be investigated. Now, there's a very specific process that we would want to walk through with the donor that takes into account, a lot of different factors as we would accept a gift of real estate. But I would invite you to, have a conversation with me so we can talk more about that opportunity, because it's a good opportunity and we would want to have that conversation. But it's a careful conversation about different factors impacted by the gift. And then the last item on the list is collections and other personal items. That's kind of, I guess, sort of the catch-all, but we want to stress that really there are so many different things, items and assets that we would want you to consider as you're looking at how do I share the gifts that God has given me in a manner that aligns with how I've lived my life and my personal, my priorities in life. And so as you look at collections and other personal items, there might be various things that you have that you feel would make sense to give to the church, either to be sold so that the proceeds could be used for a ministry purpose that is important to you, or perhaps it's a collection that you feel would that the church would be served by having in another way. So I mentioned, I do want to call out these two opportunities, beneficiary designations for life insurance policy and retirement plan assets. These are two of the easiest, especially if you already have these, you have a retirement plan, you already have policies in place. It's a simple form that's completed, and I'd be happy to provide guidance as well as I know your advisor would as well, whether it's your life insurance agent or your retirement plan provider. But I would encourage you again, I would stress that you have to be charitably minded as you enter into the planning process to want to investigate different opportunities, but there are certainly some easy ways that you can incorporate charitable gift planning during your lifetime as well as through your estate plan. So I'm going to pause and see if there are any questions that have come up. I see one here, and the question is, can I name a charitable organization for a percentage of my retirement plan? And that is absolutely true. As one would fill out a beneficiary designation form, you know, that retirement plan could be split amongst several charities or several different ministries and several different charitable organizations, and you can determine and prioritize the splitting of that asset, you know, as you would look at that beneficiary designation form. I do have another question. I have charitable interests in 3 or 4 different charitable Catholic institutions, all with their own plan giving offices. Can a single plan be crafted to handle all of my interests? And I absolutely, you know, one of the things that we want to do, as I've shared with people that I've worked with, we see this as a ministry for people in our who are members of our church community, and we want and realize and want to serve in a way that we really are helping individuals, you know, address the needs and the priorities they feel are important. And so we would absolutely be happy to work with individuals who have a number of different interests, and we would work in partnership with those other organizations to assure that the donors, you know, the donors' wishes are met. So absolutely. I'm going to move to the next slide. Oftentimes, people think, as they think about charitable gift planning or estate planning, they often will think about bequests, whether it's to an individual, a loved one, an heir. But, you know, as you think about or giving to a loved one or an individual or an heir, but as you think about charitable giving, bequests are really the best opportunity, another easy opportunity to incorporate charitable gift planning into one's estate plan. And, you know, I've listed here 4 basic types that one might incorporate a bequest. And just as by means of explanation, the first listed is specific. So what that allows for is that an individual can name that, you know, a gift of a specific sum of money or a specific item of property or a specific well-defined class of property can be gifted to a charitable organization. The second listed is percentage, and I often think this is one of the more popular, I guess, options in terms of including a bequest is percentage. And simply put, it's gifting a percentage of your estate. And what that allows for is any changes over time, because sometimes people get anxious. You know, as things change in my life, if I say I want to give X dollars to an organization, what if that ends up to be all of my estate? So I think using a percentage is really a great way to go about making a charitable gift, you know, aligned with what your priorities are as a percentage of the assets that you have. And then the next one I have listed there is residuary, and that is really a gift of what remains after all other gifts and obligations are met. So you meet all the priorities that you feel you should meet, and then what remains then goes to the charitable organizations that are important to you, and you could split that by percentage as well, what remains. And then finally, contingent, and that's really you know, a plan where a bequest is triggered by or as a result of an event that may or may not occur. So, you know, if all of my living heirs or if all of my children are no longer living, then my estate will be split in this manner amongst these charitable organizations. So I would want to underscore here that you know, for individuals to consider charitable giving, sometimes they can determine that, you know, this is not an option for me. I don't have enough wealth that I would be able to share. And I would argue that, you know, charitable gifts as small as $100 can be made in this manner, and they're going to be important because I think as we work as a community together to encourage charitable giving and encourage philanthropy together, we can truly make a difference. So we really want you to look at this as an opportunity for everyone to participate. And there really are a range of available strategies, and this is a very basic list that can really be you know, further dissected and added to depending on your particular situation. Next, we want to talk about charitable giving opportunities that would allow for income. So sometimes we have individuals who are in a situation where they can gift assets, but they would really like to receive income or would like a loved one to receive income from the gift. And so we want, although, you know, we know it's difficult in a seminar such as this to really, you know, there are a lot of technicalities to these two particular opportunities, but we want to make sure that there's an awareness that they're available, and we're happy to have a conversation with anyone who has an interest to talk in more in depth about them. But these two, charitable gift annuity and charitable remainder trust, are similar yet uniquely different opportunities. As you see at the top of the table, you know, both can provide income to you or a loved one or loved ones. Both have the advantage of a charitable tax deduction, a capital gains tax saving, and estate tax savings. Both can receive assets. And one, however, I would say, as you move down the table, charitable gift annuities, it's a fairly simple, straightforward arrangement that is entered into by a donor or donors, and it's a two-page contract that's signed with a charitable organization, and essentially that organization agrees that for a certain sum of money, we will return income to you and or your spouse or and a person of your choosing for their lifetime. And so, therefore, you know, it's a very simple contract that, and the rate is based on the person who's being receiving the income. It's based on their life expectancy. So the rate is arrived at through a table that's issued by an organization called the American Council on Gift Annuities. And so we don't just choose rates. We don't randomly determine what rates should be, but this is a established organization that helps us determine not only the archdiocese, but every charitable organization who issues charitable gift annuities, what the right rate is to offer, so that in the end, 50% of the original gift, approximately, it's our goal, will remain for the charitable purpose that the donor had originally. So, for example, the $10,000 gift listed there, we have a minimum $10,000 gift that we have for the Archdiocese in order to establish a gift annuity, and we would our goal would be to have $5,000 to go to the charity. Now, circumstances can change that alter that number. It might be higher than that if someone lives maybe not as long as was anticipated, or the market is better than was anticipated. So there are factors that are, but all that rate kind of hinges on a lot of different assumptions that hopes that we'll arrive at $5,000 in the sense of a $10,000 gift. Now, a charitable gift annuity often can be funded with, you know, cash, stock is often what I see them funded with here at the Archdiocese. You know, to transition over to charitable remainder trust, it also provides income for the donor or a loved one, and they also have the tax benefits. A charitable trust, remainder trust, can really also receive a lot of different types of assets that perhaps might be a little bit more difficult and, for a gift annuity, and the complications that can arise from having different assets when they're the saleability and the timing is unique and different. I would say a trust just allows for provides a bit more flexibility in terms of receiving assets and different types of assets like real estate, that sort of thing. The legal agreements are more complex. It's not the two-page contract. It's a more complex reporting requirements and accounting requirements. And generally, because of this, the administration and the investment of the assets and treating it as a unique, identity, then it requires really that you have at least $100,000 to go into the trust at the beginning and ongoing. So we, you know, obviously that arrangement really is best for individuals who have gifts that are, at the $100,000 or more. But I would say that recently the Archdiocese has worked to provide pathways for people who would like to easily discuss a charitable gift annuity and or a charitable remainder trust. And what we want to express here is that we would be, we will do our best to work with advisors in place to assist you as you move forward to look at different opportunities, because these can be incorporated into an estate plan as well as established during life. So there's really quite a bit of opportunity in looking at these two income-producing gifts. One of the things we do is we work with donors, whether it's with a charitable gift annuity or a charitable trust, we work with, we'll work one-on-one to kind of walk through illustrations to see what would be the benefits of you entering into these arrangements. And this is one sample I did for Mrs. Jean Generous, who's age 70. For charitable gift annuities, we have a minimum age of 60. So one would have to be 60 to receive income. But do know that we work with individuals who want to defer income. So they may be 55 and they say, well, I want to do a gift annuity where I'll get income at age 65. And so we can make arrangements to do that. So there, again, with trying to be straightforward in this webinar, but there are lots of different arrangements when you look at charitable gift annuities. So this is a flow chart that shows, the cash box is really the donation we would get from the donor. And then the idea is that at age 70, the person would, the American Council on Gift Annuities would say, okay, you would get, we would recommend a rate of 5.1%. To be paid annually for the every year for the remainder of Mrs. Generous's life. So you see the principal, and then you see the 5.1% applied is how you arrive at a $510 annuity every year. So the payment would be $510, and then with the goal at the end of time, at the end of that period, to be $5,000. And when we have charity here, it could be any number of charity. And I will pause and share here that the Archdiocese of Indianapolis operates a charitable giving annuity, a charitable gift annuity program for all of its ministries. So someone asked earlier about having multiple ministry interests, that and all of these different places have development offices. And sometimes that's even within the Archdiocese. We have development staff. And keep in mind that we work in partnership to provide a charitable gift annuity program where individuals can set up an annuity and then name any ministry of the Archdiocese to receive a certain percentage of, and maybe it's multiple ministries, whether it's a school or a parish or a Catholic Charities Agency, the Archdiocese, the Catholic Community Foundation, whatever it may be. So with a charitable, and I used as an example a charitable unit trust, but there are lots of different types of charitable trusts. and that could be a whole separate webinar, which hopefully we'll do eventually. But at this point, I wanted to use as an example a charitable unit trust. And what this arrangement does is if you look to the far left, sometimes the property donated will have a cost basis that we have to allow for any gain in the property. But here you see it was a cash gift because there's zero gain. And then just like the prior slide, you see the principal amount. And then the unique thing about a charitable trust is that versus a charitable gift annuity where the rate is based on whomever's receiving the income, it's based on their age and other factors. It also, with a charitable trust, generally speaking, one can elect to choose between 5% and 7% payout rate. So now the interesting thing is and what we would want to work with individuals on is there are lots of things to keep in mind. One might think, well, I really want 7%, absolutely, but over time that can erode the principal of the trust in some instances. So it's good to do the mathematical exercise to understand, you know, what are my income goals, and so long term, how can I ensure that, you know, that I'm meeting all of my goals. And it's not just a conversation with the donor, but it's a conversation with financial advisors as well, because we'll want a complete picture of, you know, what the goals and objectives are. Over here to the right, you'll see a box that has charity in it. And I'll warn you that as I do the illustrations for donors, there are a lot of factors that can determine what the slides will look like. And I tried to be conservative in putting in a 6.5% market, you know, performance in the market. And so that this growth from 100,000 to 128 is really based on, you know, we can change that and it can look a lot different depending on market performance. But I thought this was a fairly conservative way to look at how this gift, given the income that would be paid out, what it might result in for charity. Keep in mind that multiple charities could be receive these interests, and also that, you know, as one would kind of consider looking at a trust, that there are a lot of factors that can impact kind of the outcomes one would see. But it's really a fantastic opportunity that, you know, people should consider. So I'll ask if there are any questions at this point. I want to just note, and, you know, as we go along, please do feel free to put those up on the chat screen so that we can see. I have a question here. Are bequests revocable? And absolutely. You know, hopefully people are updating and revisiting their estate plans every 3 to 5 years, just to ensure, you know, as we all know, things have been changing frequently. even mentioning earlier the IRA rollover opportunity, that's been coming and going, so you have to keep your eyes open. So, you do want to work with your financial planner and your attorney and look at these documents on a regular basis. And another question I see here is, do you offer sample bequest language? And yes, we do. And again, we're happy to share that. I will get contacted by people's attorneys, financial planners, the donors themselves, and we're happy to pass that along and be of resource to people, because that's why we're here. We want to be helpful, and any questions we can answer along the way, in any way we can be helpful, we're happy to do. So in the interest of time, I'm just going to move to our next slide. If other questions come up, we'll address those. I want to talk just quickly about giving to the Catholic Church. Really, there's a number of ways to look at your charitable giving, not only with the Catholic Church, but with other organizations that you're looking at. Most often, you'll see that organizations will have permanent funds. And I have listed here two bullet points, expendable gift and perpetual gift. You know, as one would make a gift to their estate plan, they might look they might feel strongly that they want to make the gift and they want it to be used immediately, spent immediately for a specific purpose. And I would call this an expendable gift. And those certainly arrive at our ministries, and they're useful and important. Now, I've worked with donors, too, though, that feel that when I pass away, if I have money to share with charity, I really want it to be permanent, and a permanent fund where just the distribution is available and the principal is invested over time so that that nest egg continues in perpetuity, but there's a distribution that's available ongoing. So these are various options to think about, and you should really reflect on as to how you feel about how you might want to share your gifts or your estate plan. Do want to just highlight the Catholic Community Foundation. It was established in 1987, has over 430 funds, and what I'd like to, I guess I call the Catholic Community Foundation another kind of savings account for our ministries. Almost every parish, school, Catholic Charities Agency, and other church ministries have funds already with us. We have a lot of donors that step forward as individuals, whether through their estate plan or during life, and wish to establish a named fund, whether it's in honor of a family member or in memory of a family member or an individual. We have lots of unique situations where we've worked with family through that process, and it is important. It's a wonderful opportunity to work with a charitable organization to identify the best opportunities for giving. The foundation really works to encourage long-term financial health of our church ministries here in central and southern Indiana through endowments and planned gifts. So I'll just wrap up by showing you a slide here with our contact information and website information. Want to encourage you to get in touch. Again, as Phil said earlier, we work confidentially with individuals who have an interest in giving to the church and any of its ministries. And just in terms of being charitably minded, there are several resources we have available and be happy to have a confidential conversation with you. I want to thank you for joining us today. As follow-up, you'll receive a survey via email as well as the PowerPoint and audio from this webinar. We hope that this is the first of several webinars to come, and we certainly appreciate you participating today. If there are any questions, I'd encourage you to send them to me via email as our time for the webinar has come to a close. Thank you, and have a wonderful evening. God bless you. Thank you.